you very much for that introduction, Dr. Irvin. I'm very excited to have this opportunity to speak about my master's research today. So getting started, I'll give you a little bit of background about seashore passbellum if you're unfamiliar with it. Seashore passbellum is a warm season turf grass that is generally adapted to the same growing regions as Bermuda grass. It's a premium turf sought after for use in sporting venues as well as golf course greens. Seashore passbellum was adapted to dune environments, therefore it's not surprising that it's very salt tolerant, waterlogging tolerant, as well as being drought tolerant. It's primarily vegetatively propagated due to its rhizomatous and stoloniferous spreading habit. The first problem with using seashore passbellum is establishment. To replace a Bermuda grass green with seashore passbellum, you have to eradicate all Bermuda grass. This is done through fumigation, and this is very costly, and there's safety and environmental issues associated with this. Second problem is Bermuda grass invasion. Here's a turf manager inspecting a Bermuda grass invasion, and there's no available herbicide that can select between these two grasses. So he's left with using the current control method, non-selective herbicides. As you can see, this greatly reduces the aesthetic value of any turf. So my objective became to obtain herbicide resistance in seashore passbellum so there can be selection between these two grasses. On the right, you see Bermuda grass encroaching on a passbellum green. So glyphosate resistance has been obtained in bent grass. However, this is a transgenic method, and public perceptions, regulatory costs, and international restrictions have prevented this very promising technology from being marketed at this time. So a non-transgenic methodology would be optimum for seashore passbellum. Cethoxin resistance has been obtained in corn in a non-transgenic way, showing a model system. Cethoxin resistance also has been observed in numerous weedy species, and it's important to note that these have arisen in agricultural situations and where cethoxin has been applied year after year on broadleaf crops trying to control weedy grasses. So now I want to speak a little bit about cethoxin mode of action and acetyl coenzyme A carboxylase, and which I'll referring to from now on as ACCAs. ACCAs is an enzyme that's located in the chloroplast. There is a binding site for acetyl-CoA and a carboxyl group, ACCAs carboxylates acetyl-CoA to form malonyl-CoA, a precursor for fatty acid biosynthesis, and fatty acids are essential for cell life. And please note the isoleucine amino acid at the opening of the acetyl-CoA binding site, as this is important later. When cethoxin is introduced, it binds in the same binding site as acetyl-CoA, and this competitively inhibits the binding of acetyl-CoA, causing cell death. For the five weedy species I mentioned earlier, a single isoleucine to leucine substitution in the amino acid position 1781 in the carboxyl transferase domain is responsible for resistance. In the first position of isoleucine codon, you have an A to a T mutation. This changes the isoleucine to a leucine, so one single base pair changes one amino acid, which changes the binding site, conferring resistance. So now, instead of having that isoleucine I asked you to pay attention to earlier, we now have a leucine. This leucine hangs into the binding site for acetyl-CoA, and this sterically inhibits the binding of cethoxin, but still allowing acetyl-CoA and the carboxyl group to bind as normal, forming malonyl-CoA. So I want to obtain resistance via somoclonal variation. Somoclonal variation refers to any spontaneous genetic change that happens in any cell at any given time. In planta, the mutation has to occur in the germline to be passed on to the progeny. And this is what happened in those weedy species mentioned earlier. However, in vitro, the mutation can happen in any given plant cell and possibly be recovered as a whole plant. And previously published data has shown that having any one base pair change has approximately 1 in 20 million chance of occurring. So this became my strategy for obtaining cethoxin-resistant seashore passbellum. First was to use explant material, which was immature inflorescences. This was placed on callus induction medium. 3 to 4 weeks, these calli were removed and amplified and then placed on selection medium. The picture on the bottom right corner shows a cethoxam-resistant callus. A callus such as this was removed, amplified again, and then regenerated for whole plants. These whole plants were then sequenced to see if it has this desired A to T mutation, as well as being evaluated for whole plant resistance to cethoxam. Callus induction medium consists of MSB5 basal salt supplemented with 2 milligrams per liter 2,4-D. I initiated 28 cell lines from 10 different genotypes. Selection plates consisted of 245 by 245 millimeter plates, and this allowed the plating of 225 calli per plate. With a 1 in 20 million chance of actually finding a cell that is resistant, it became very clear that the small plates on the left would not provide enough plating of calli to provide the SR resistant lines. The medium was callus induction medium, supplemented with 10 micromolar of cethoxam. This 10 micromolar concentration was based on a callus dose response I performed previously. Each of these plates were transferred 3 times at 3-week intervals. Regeneration was a 2-step process. First, shoot induction, then root induction. Shoot induction medium consists of MSB5 basal salts supplemented with 5 micromolar BAP and 6.2 micromolar cupric sulfate. Root induction was merely MSB5 without any growth regulators. So 90 plates made it completely through selection. This was a total of 20,250 calli and approximately 5.2 billion cells. The selection procedure produced 65 cethoxam-resistant lines. 3 of these lines produced the desired A to T mutation, and only one of these lines regenerated, and it was designated SR11. This will be the line I'll be speaking about for the rest of the presentation. So my mutation rate was considerably lower than those published previously. I found the mutation rate of getting the A to T mutation was around 1 in 1.74 billion cells, and the chance of getting a whole plant resistance was approximately 1 in 5.2 billion. So sequencing of wild type showed the expected isoleucine ATA codon. Sequencing of line SR11 showed an A and a T in the first position. Now this is to be expected as C-short paspalum is a diploid, having 2 copies of the gene. One copy remaining the wild type and the other copy having the TTA mutation. Whole plant characterization consisted of 8 treatments ranging from 0 to 3,200 grams of active ingredient per hectare. Around 300 grams of active ingredient per hectare is a recommended dose rate for controlling grasses and broadleaf crops. This is a dose response after 14 days after treatment. Mauna Kea is a parental line of line SR11, and around 100 grams of active ingredient per hectare, you can see extreme damage. Tissue culture control was again Mauna Kea parental line, except this line had made it through all steps of tissue culture, excluding selection, and it had a very similar dose response. SR11 had extreme resistance all the way to 3,200 grams of active ingredient per hectare. So this is a graphical interpretation of this data. Mauna Kea and tissue culture control again had high levels of damage early on at the lower concentrations, where SR11 had extreme resistance, never surpassing 10% damage. So in conclusion, cethoxam resistance was obtained in C-short paspalum. The use of in vitro techniques makes it being able to obtain cethoxam resistant grasses possible in a relatively short period of time, but using large quantities of callus was key to accomplishing this. SR paspalum could possibly be the first marketable herbicide resistant turf grass, and we're very excited about that. So I'd like to acknowledge Pete Lafayette for his assistance and advice on the molecular part of this project, Barbara Artelt for advisement on the tissue culture part of this project. LaWayne White for his highly calibrated eye and whole plant dose response. Dr. Clint Walsh and Dr. William Bensel, my committee members. Dr. Tim Murphy for his advice on the weed control aspects of this project. Dr. Jerry Davis for advisement on the statistical analysis. I'd also like to thank the undergrad workers of the Parrot Lab for being available every once in a while to be able to hand transfer a large plate. So, I'd like to answer any questions you might have. Thank you.
Got time for a couple questions?
How far along are you in evaluating this phenotype in the field?
Right now it's going to the field trials. All dose response data and evaluation of the plants have been in the greenhouse so far.
What do you think the probability of Bermuda grass developing natural resistance to this herbicide by itself?
Okay, the question was, what's the chance of Bermuda grass obtaining the natural resistance, such as those weedy species? In those examples I gave about weedy species, that was applied in a very large-scale application year after year. It's not impossible. That's the answer I have to this. And what we have in mind for application of cethoxin, say a golf course green, is spot application, not as in an agricultural situation where you apply it over and over again. And if that does happen, the Bermuda grass gets the resistance, then I will collect that and patent it.
Okay, let's thanks.
All right, thank you.